The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Bill Corrington, Federal Director, Cloud Security Alliance, and we have Juanita Colpilai, Founder and CEO of Waverly Labs. Good morning, you two. How are you doing?
Very well.
Boy, two different voices, two different perspectives. Going to be hard, maybe the harder easy for me because I kind of get people confused all the time. Two different voices there, though, completely. Juanita, tell the audience here a little bit about your background and how you wound up working with Waverly Labs, please.
Yeah, I'm a cybersecurity analyst and mathematician background. I've been doing cybersecurity for 30 years. I've worked in different companies, federal and commercial, and ended up starting my own business back in 96. Built the first attack sensing and warning system, sold that to Symantec, and went home to raise kids for a while, and then came back a few years ago, started researching cybersecurity again because the problem seems to have gotten harder, tougher, much more pernicious than we ever imagined it being. And so Waverly was launched to create digital risk management solutions and primarily to prioritize and quantify digital risk from a business perspective to help the IT and application and business owners integrate their efforts to provide a unified front to what's going on with the cyber threat.
I do like the word pernicious. When I think of pernicious, I think of a doctor. And, oh, Bill, you have pernicious anemia. I mean, you beat it with a stick, it's just not going to go away, you know. And so a pernicious problem with cybersecurity is the problem's not going to go away. You know, maybe 8 years ago it was defined one way. Today, with the transition to the cloud, it's defined in a different way and always changing and mutating very quickly. That's good. So digital risk management. When I wrote my notes for this program, I wrote down DR. I kept wanting to sound ERP. No, not enterprise research notes. DRP. So your focus is on digital risk profile, right?
Good.
Okay. And Bill, tell us about your background and how you wound up with Cloud Security Alliance, please.
Sure. Well, I've been in the IT industry since, the beginning of time. It feels like I actually wrote my first computer program in BASIC, the good old BASIC language, in about 1971, I think it was. So I've been doing this for a long, long time. Have done a lot of different things, from software development. I started my own company back in the 80s, and the first wave of the IBM PC, when it was kind of taking the world by storm, and have had a variety of roles. I was the chief technology officer for the Department of the Interior from 2007 to 2011.
And so Cognoscenti called that DOI, of course, but we know about DOI.
and while I was at Interior, I was involved in some of the early efforts for Interior to move some key systems to the cloud model. And I also was involved in some of the government-wide working groups that Vivek Kundra had established on cloud policies and trying to help collectively to move agencies to the cloud model. That's when I first heard about the Cloud Security Alliance, which was formed in 2009. So the time that I was getting involved in cloud at Interior is the same time that the Cloud Security Alliance, or CSA, was being formed in order to promote the best practices and around cloud security, things like that. It was really beneficial for me at that time because obviously security continues to be one of the big concerns, challenges around cloud. Well, really all IT, but certainly the cloud model brings it really to the forefront. So after I left the government in 2011 and doing some various projects and consulting engagements and things like that, but I ended up as the federal director, where I'm focused on bringing the message, the best practices, the the research education that the Cloud Security Alliance as a nonprofit brings to the broader community. The goal of the CSA is to really advance best practices for cloud computing, and really the overall goal is to make the cloud model more secure than any other model, than traditional IT. That's kind of the overarching goal for the CSA.
When you talked about the year 2009, I first flashed back on Vivek sitting in that very chair there and talking to me about this whole 25-point thing. And all of a sudden, who knew that little seed that he planted years ago would result in this whole world that followed him after that. So Cloud Security Alliance, if you'd like more information, it is a .org, and it is a cloudsecurityalliance.org, which is one of the easiest URLs in the history of the show, Cloud Security Alliance. 48,000 members, about 16 people on staff. Is that right?
We're growing. We're up over 20 on staff now, and we've got around the world, we've actually got closer to 60,000 individual members and almost 300 corporate members who contribute to our various working groups and research efforts, and collectively drawing on that brain power to develop and promote the best practices.
You know, I said the silly phrase DOI, and that's how people at Over Interior call it. But really, they're focused on the interior. But many agencies of the federal government are focused on the exterior, overseas. And I think your overseas presence is so important. I mean, you folks have meetings in China, in Germany, in this strange area called Las Vegas, somewhere, I don't know where that's at, somewhere out west. And so you really have a real good international impact. And so that really is important for my listeners because, I mean, take a look at the military. I mean, just any one of these agencies that's listening right now, they have this international capability. So your background is math and computer science, and you've worked for big companies and small companies in the federal government, so that's good. And Monita's background also is math and science, and she has not only worked for Symantec, but she sold a company to Symantec and has good, strong background. So what is my question is, so what are you two getting to? Do you meet each other at a bus stop, or how'd you wind up connecting together?
I was working on the NIST Cloud Security Reference Architecture and went to one of their conferences to present the architecture with NIST. Met up with the cloud security people and a couple of other tech guys and ended up working and providing and contributing to this concept called the software-defined perimeter that the Cloud Security Alliance.
And that's the big news. Is that right, Bill?
That's
software-defined perimeter.
That's right. Software-defined perimeter is a concept that the CSA has developed over actually two or three years. It's been in, I would say in development, but it's an architecture that, like all architectures, has evolved and matured. It's not so much a new technology as an architectural approach and pulling together existing technologies really is built on some concepts and approaches that come out of the Intel community The term that's been thrown around is black clouds, and basically it's making servers and services and applications that are within a network invisible by default and granting access only on a need to know basis. And so overall, we think it's a much stronger model, and it's been proven out in some real world environments. And so it's something that we've established. We've published the standard. It's public domain, so there's no licensing fees associated with using it. The information on the standard is available on the website.
So, Juanita, is this similar to a software-defined network? Is this the same general area, or compare those two, please?
So the software-defined network concept is at layer 1 and 2, where you define networks on the fly, whereas the software-defined perimeter specifically for architectural elements to provide a security enclave. And it's a security architecture-oriented concept, which is different from a network architecture concept.
Couldn't it be deployed in the same manner? Is it completely different levels then? Not L1, 2, this is beyond that, not comparable.
So the security architecture really needs to address all layers of the network, level 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way from users accessing all the way to the application providing the data. And that's what we define as a security architecture. And when we worked with the NIST Cloud Security Alliance reference architecture, we tried to define very clearly all the layers that were involved in a security architecture. And people can go and look at that and reference it. It was based on some work also done by the Cloud Security Alliance. And it's very in-depth concepts that were presented there, which are not specific to software-defined networks, but a security architecture in particular.
Let's take a break and come back. We'll talk more about this concept of a software-defined perimeter and maybe talk about open source and software-defined and security and what this all means for my listeners. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Bill Corrington, Federal Director, Cloud Security Alliance, and Juanita Colpilai, founder and CEO of Waverly Labs. Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Bill Corrington, Federal Director, Cloud Security Alliance, and Juanita Colpilai, founder and CEO of Waverly Labs. Before the break, we were kind of got a better idea what your backgrounds were, math, science, security, Cloud Security Alliance, Waverly Labs, and we brought up the topic. I guess I want to focus on this topic in this block. It's called software-defined perimeters. But before we delve into that, you know, I had a fellow in the studio 2 weeks ago who has written 24 books, and his last book was about public-private partnerships and how the government can benefit from these public-private partnerships. And doing the research for this interview, there's a public-private connection here with Mazda and Coca-Cola and this whole concept of a software-defined perimeter. Bill, can you expand on that, please?
Sure. As I mentioned, the software-defined perimeter architecture is it's a specification that's been released. It's available through the CSA website. It's something that we've contributed to the community of cloud the information technology and cloud community. The participation in the development of that specification is from the various CSA members and participants. Two of the big players in that have been Coca-Cola and Mazda, who are both working to implement the software-defined perimeter in their networks, in their services that they provide. For example, Mazda is going to be integrating that into the services that they provide out to their smart cars. And so it'll be part of the security architecture and model that they deploy out in, to services that are out in the vehicles. So they're participating, those organizations are participating in the development of the standard and the architecture and using it to secure their services and their critical environments.
You know, Juanita, I've had enterprise architects in the studio and they've handed me these frameworks, and it's like in 6-point type. And it's 1,000 different connections and arrows. And, I started beating my head against the wall, and I didn't understand it at all. Perhaps you can paint a picture in broad strokes, not in 6-point type, of, what the SDP looks like from, maybe a cloud security perspective.
So it's really defined to be multiple layers. The very first layer is to hide your applications, not broadcast the IP of your application. You create a gateway and a controller that listens for very specific information from clients, opens up the firewall for specific communications between the client and the server. The beauty of this is you have a deny all rule on the firewall and only allow applications to communicate with clients that have authenticated themselves from the devices that they reside on and the users to authenticate themselves as well. So that, in effect, hides the server from being accessed from the public. Whether you have the server on-premise or in the cloud, this server is hidden. And so that's why we came up with the term, you hear the term black cloud or black application. And if you can't see the server, it's much harder to initiate a network attack on that server. And then once you create that layer, you can add other layers for mutual communication. So you secure the communications between the client and the server. You use the same kind of cryptography and tokens all through every single communication between the client and the server. You can use those keys also to secure the data, provide specific access to those data elements, and so you can have very neat attribute-based access control from the specification. So it's really an end-to-end integrated model, which is very different and which is required for where we are today, as opposed to what we have today. It would be good to upgrade our infrastructure.
So these protocols didn't fall from the cloud. These protocols originated somewhere. Originated at DOD and NASA, NSA, is that right?
NSA came up with the device fingerprinting capability. DOD has always had a need-to-know access model and kind of allowed the access to their networks only for people who need to know and are allowed to have access to those networks. And we feel like the commercial industry should be embracing that as well.
So, Bill, there's a concept here that's new to me. It's called mutual TLS. Mm-hmm. When I used to have to take those silly tests, never came up in the checklist of the protocols. Had to memorize, did it? I don't know. Is this something it's been around for years? No, let's pull this out of the closet. It's been sitting on the shelf for 20 years, huh?
Right. It's TLS is transport layer security, and
I had to memorize that one. I know okay. that, but not MTLS.
Well, MTLS is really just doing the kind of authentication that you would expect to do as the analogy would be a user logging onto a website, say if you were doing online banking or something like that, or any kind of online service where you would enter your username and password to authenticate yourself. And so it's something that's happening in the network where you have that authentication, but it's happening on both ends. So the requester of a service is authenticating to the service provider, and the service provider is authenticating back to the user saying, yeah, it's really me. So you avoid issues with spoofed services.
Man in the middle
kinds of attacks, exactly, and things like that. So it's not a new technology. It's something that's been around, and that's why I mentioned earlier that the SDP isn't necessarily a new technology as much as it's a new way of pulling together existing technologies and protocols. And so something like mutual authentication using TLS isn't new, but it's really a good idea. So we put it in the specification. You do it. And that's part of SDP, is saying you actually do these things instead of having these good ideas sitting on the shelf.
And so what Cloud Security Alliance does is it works for organizations and tries to come up with creative ways to use, it's not really emerging technology. It's really old technology that's used in a new way. You know, I keep thinking emerging is so Juanita sat in her basement and come up with something brand new. No, it's something that, look, this has been sitting on the shelf here. Let's combine it with another type of technology, and we can have the equivalent of emerging technology.
Yes, absolutely.
I read a lot of blogs in preparation for this interview. And I read a blog written by Juanita, and she talked about knowledge-based authentication. And does this apply with mobile devices too, or how does this all work?
Yes, it's specifically designed for mobile devices. With the Internet of Things and the advent of using devices to access your applications from anywhere in the world, right? These mobile devices don't sit in one place. It's not from a workstation anymore. You need to be able to dynamically adjust and create your firewall to allow these devices to access. You need to make sure that these devices are pre-registered so you know about them, and the users authenticated so that they are pinned to the device and fingerprinted, the device is fingerprinted, and then you use that information in the communications mechanism. And so today's authentication with knowledge base is enhanced by adding these added layers of security. The Cloud Security Alliance had a hackathon set up for the last couple of years to break into an implementation of the software-defined perimeter, and it's proven unbeatable thus far.
Good, good. Well, I want to talk about the Cloud Security Alliance a little bit here. If you look at their 20 last tweets, you get a pretty good information of what's going on there. One of their tweets said, and this is called back to you, Juanita, is that 25% mobile replacement annually. So the smartphones you see floating around there, and I think that's a pretty good number, 20-25% of the people replace their mobile phones. And how does that impact the security? All of a sudden drop everything and change the security profile? No, but if we can go back to your blog post, all of a sudden now it fits in. It's got nothing to do with the advice. The device, you can have five devices in a day, but as long as they conform to the strictures of software-defined perimeters, it'll be fine.
It'll be fine because you've got to go and authenticate yourself.
Yeah.
And fingerprint your device.
And so before you two leave, you're going to go to the Apple store and buy a new Well, you have to. It's 25%. We're at 24.9. We got to go out and buy some new devices. Let's take a break and come back. We'll talk more about software-defined perimeters, the Cloud Security Alliance, and Waverly Labs. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Bill Corrington, Federal Director Cloud Security Alliance, and Juanita Coyle-Pillay, founder and CEO of Waverly Labs. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Bill Corrigan, Federal Director Cloud Security Alliance, and we have Juanita Coyle-Pillay, founder and CEO of Waverly Labs. We got a .org and a .com in the studio here. If you want to go to Cloud Security Alliance, it's a .org. If you want to go to Waverly, W-A-V as in victory, W-A-V-E-R-L-E-Y-L-A-B-S.com for more information on both groups. You know, I'm in a classroom, and a lot of my students read blogs. Some don't, but some do. So I got to respect the audience. There's probably members of this audience that read blogs to keep up with stuff. I sure do. I read blogs all the time. And I think Cloud Security's got a blog. How would they find that blog anyway?
Well, you can just go to the website, and there's a link to blogs right on the main page of the website.
That's perfect.
CloudSecurityAlliance.org.
And I think it's pretty simple for your group, too, isn't it? Juanita, yes. Waverly Labs, and blogs are fine. Yeah. And you should know this is also a podcast, so you can go to the Apple Store and type in Federal Tech Talk or Federal News Radio, and you can listen to this as a podcast, maybe put it in the car and listen to it on the way to work or something, where a lot of people are more and more interested in podcasts these days, and that's for sure. Before the break, we started talking about software-defined perimeters, and Bill, maybe you can expand on that a little bit more and tell us what it means for our federal audience.
Well, as I've mentioned, the SDP is an architecture. It's starting to be deployed in a couple of commercial environments, the first two are Coca-Cola and Mazda. But we've also proved it out in some real-world scenarios. The CSA has conducted three what we call hackathons over the last couple of years. The first was in February of 2014, so just about a year and a half ago. We did another one last fall, and then most recently in April of this year, coincident with the RSA Security Conference out in San Francisco. Each of those hackathons has had a different focus, but basically what we've done is set up a server protected with the SDP and invited attackers to try to hack in. And this year, the scenario was to test the ability of the SDP to protect against credential theft, use of stolen credentials to access a service, a server, and the services on it. In that scenario, we actually provided a username and password, an IP address, and other information to potential hackers, and also offered a $10,000 prize.
Well, that's going to be interesting. And no one got it, huh?
No one got it. The roughly 10 million attacks were stopped, 100%, perfect score. One of our folks in the SDP said that SDP is undefeated. And so I like that, being a sports fan. And for the other two hackathons, so for all three hackathons, no one has been able to break through at all, and the $10,000 prize remains unawarded.
So Juanita, you took this to DHS and said, "Hey, take a look at this, and I have an announcement to make, huh?"
They had a problem to solve the distributed denial of service attack problem, and the Department of Homeland Security's Science and Technology Division has we're working with them to create an open source version of the SDP for specifically this distributed denial of service attack project that we've got at DHS going. So as part of that, we have been working with the Cloud Security Alliance Working Group. We meet every week with updates on what other open source software tools that are out there. Just last week, we posted a potential gateway that could be used for the implementation of the SDP specification itself.
Great.
And we're going to be continually updating the community and putting out the source code that we've developed to help our customers.
So Bill, what other federal agencies would be candidates for SDPs?
Well, any agency that's got critical or proprietary information that they need to protect, which I would say is just about everyone.
Health, start off with health, I think that's the obvious one there. And financial information, that's too.
Health, IT, finance, personnel information.
Critical, like energy, critical infrastructures, manufacturing.
Critical infrastructure, exactly. I mean, I think every agency has their own, you know, based on their mission and their you know, the particular constituents that they have, there's going to be all kinds of different flavors of what is critical in their environment. It may not be what we would call, you know, classified or top secret from the Intel or DOD kind of perspective, but it's certainly critical information that needs to be protected. So I would say really every agency is going to have a need or an opportunity to leverage this kind of approach.
Right, and even installing like the very first layer of the security architecture will get them a long way towards protecting their infrastructure, their critical infrastructures in particular.
Mm-hmm. And I'll go back to your blog post, knowledge-based authentication. You talk about OPM. I mean, who'd have thunk it? I would think healthcare, but OPM, IRS, and that was the genesis of your blog post, is talking about an IRS attack that happened a while back. And I think while you're writing the blog post, OPM information got distributed, huh?
That's correct. So that in that particular case, there was the credentials were given out, and if they implemented the software-defined perimeter protocol, you would be able to clearly state what devices can be authorized onto their networks and who can access this information, even third-party vendors who are, you know, accessing OPM's networks and software. They could have a little more control over that, which in this case they did not.
And so because it's open source, the Cloud Security Alliance is not endorsing any specific vendor and saying, hey, this Carter system is the best out there. And it's saying is, look, it's open source. Try it. Test it. See if it works. If it works, it may be an application for you. And by the way, because it's not proprietary, it can be tested by everyone, used by everyone, and improved by this whole community, maybe within the Cloud Security Alliance itself. Have you gotten good response from your blog post?
Absolutely.
No, I'll bet. Yeah, it was a good one. I thought it was well written. There's one on the Cloud Security Alliance. I love this title. It's one of my favorite titles of all time. How to Create the Perfect Climate for Endpoint Data Migration. So good. Talking about the cloud and climate and endpoint data migration. I'll bet half of this audience is worried about some type of endpoint data migration because everyone's going to move hybrid cloud to the cloud, keep moving stuff, and how to do it effectively. And I would think that new ways, new emerging technologies might be of interest to many
especially
in the audience.
Especially the edge security paradigm is changing with the cloud environment and
exactly.
Moving applications to the cloud. So
exactly. I mean, the traditional security models have been based on kind of the, you know, what they call the castle and moat, or, you know, very perimeter based, but the perimeter is going, if it hasn't gone already, with mobile devices and users being out of the office. There's no there anymore, and data and services being moved to the cloud. So the perimeter model just doesn't apply anymore.
Jim Benson sat in that chair about 3 weeks ago, and he said, I want to use a four-letter word here. I said, whoa, going to get us in trouble. He said, the word is apps. Yes. And he said, you know, there's application access. This is the seam. This is the chink in the armor, the chink in the wall where people are penetrating, where you may have a 10-foot wall and you're forgetting about some small little hole there. And this is with the access. And I think this is what you did in your test, the hackers. So you gave the hackers at least partial access to authentication, and they still couldn't break it.
That's right.
That's correct.
And so what your system does, or this proposed system, it allows access to certain parts of the system instead of the whole network. Is that a good summary?
It actually it allows you to protect the network.
Because you can't see it.
Firewalls
and, it's black.
And the applications, because you can't see it.
That's good. Let's come back and talk more about the black cloud and using emerging technologies, or maybe taking old technologies and applying them in a new manner. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning is Bill Corrington, Federal Director, Cloud Security Alliance, and Juanita Coyle Pillai, founder and CEO of Waverly Labs. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Bill Corrington, Federal Director for the Cloud Security Alliance, and Juanita Coyle Pillai, founder and CEO of Waverly Labs. We've been talking about using an old established technology in a new way. And we've been talking about something that has been adopted by at least one small aspect of the DHS. What happens is a lot of people, you know, read blogs. We talked about that before. Some people like to follow along on Twitter. And I think for Waverly Labs, your Twitter handle is at Waverly Labs. Is that right, Juanita?
That's correct.
Okay. And then Cloud SA for the Cloud Security Alliance.
That's right.
And they got a whole passel of tweets there. You can find out what's going on with them. And you can follow me. My handle is at Ray Gilray. And I don't even know why I use that, but I use at Ray Gilray. It's a lot of fun. And I put pictures up. In fact, I take pictures of my guest and I tweet it out. And people thank me for it, believe it or not. They do. They thank me for these informal pictures. What happens, Juanita, is that I do an interview and someone listens to it and I have an event and they kind of sit down next to me and they go, that Juanita, you know, she sounded real smart. What kind of a smartphone does she have? And that's the questions they ask, you know. They don't care about your mathematics degree. They don't care about you founded a company. They want to know what smartphone, oh, really, what smartphone does she have? And so I've come up with a scientific 10-question test. I'm going to put both of you to this test to find out which one of you two is the actual card-carrying nerd. Math and science background. We'll find out. So we're going to pick on Bill first. So, Bill, tell me, do you have an Instagram account?
Nope.
How many cell phones have you purchased in the last year?
One.
Okay, so you fall in the 25%. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do, but I don't
give it
use
out.
It,
okay. So, yeah. Have you ever used Meerkat or Periscope?
No, not a streaming.
What kind of smartphone do you have?
It's an Android.
We know what that means. What's the most popular app on that Android in the last 30 days?
Well, you know, I'm a golfer, so I would say the Weather Channel app is.
So, Bill, we break into your house. How many tablet devices are floating around there?
Just one.
Not strong in the nerd scale here. He may be normal. And when was your most recent post in social networks?
Probably a couple of days ago.
Okay. And do you have an Apple watch on order?
I do not.
See, he's failing miserably. Final question. Last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
Paper.
Wow, Juanita, if you don't whoop him on this one, we're going to kick him out of here. You better whoop him real bad on this one, okay? Let's go. Miss Juanita, tell me, do you have an Instagram account?
I do not.
How many cell phones have you purchased in the last year yourself?
For myself, none, it's been over a year since I've had broken mine.
Oh, boy, you're in big trouble here. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do not.
Well, Bill, there's a hope here for you. Have you ever used Meerkat or Periscope?
No.
Okay. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have an iPhone.
Wow, there's a differentiator. And what's the most popular app on that iPhone?
Maps. Because I'm driving around all the time looking at my maps.
So we break into your house, and how many tablet devices do we see floating around there?
Oh, my God. We are extremely geeky. Oh, my God. 3 plus 4.
Okay. And when was your most recent post in social networking?
Yeah, yesterday.
Okay. And do you have an Apple Watch on order?
Not an Apple Watch, but I use my iPhone.
That's close. And the last book you read, Juanita, was electronic or was it paper?
was unfortunately paper.
You two are not nerds. Come on. No self-respecting computer science major or math major is going to take this test. Now go home and study and come back next week and go buy an Apple Watch and spend the $17,000. And people are spending that, Bill. Do you believe it?
I'm saving my money for a Google car.
Google car, yeah. And then you can look at apps on your way in. Bill, we usually reserve this part of the show for crystal ball. And I like to make sports predictions, and maybe you do too, golf predictions, but we're going to ask about technology predictions. So we've seen that this technology has been available to the commercial world. It's been available in large deployments, so we got a couple checklists here and whatnot. Where do you think it's heading for the federal government?
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for the federal government to leverage this technology. The DHS obviously is starting. It's really an opportunity for federal agencies to leverage this approach that is being deployed in the commercial world. It's been proven through our hackathons to be a robust architecture and security model. It's not a future; it's here today. So, I think the opportunity for federal agencies is to follow the lead of DHS and to leverage this approach in order to improve security, and I think that's it's just going to grow and expand as the concepts continue to be proven out.
2 days ago, I had a workshop with 17 salespeople out in Reston, and I was going back and forth with these guys and throwing chairs and yelling and screaming, and one of the objections that they hear from their customers is, well, we've always done it this way. Why should we change? And I look at my govies, and, they're same human beings. Maybe they work for DHS, maybe they work for DOI, but the same human beings are there. And, I don't know, Juanita, I don't know, Bill, we've always done it this way. And so maybe that's a big resistance to open source. You think that, we've never used open source before. Bill, why should we use it now?
Well, the way things have been done is part of the reason that there are so many issues with security. And so in order to change the outcomes, you need to change the approaches. And so, there's certainly plenty of examples of data breaches and various issues with security in both commercial and government arenas. And as I said, if you want different results, you need to do things differently.
So, Juanita, what is your take on the future of this open source approach and some of the innovation you've talked about with software-defined perimeter in the federal government? Thinking to take up on it and right. change?
I don't think the federal government can afford to do nothing anymore. We have seen so many embarrassing hacks on very simple kinds of solutions that could protect them. And I would like to see us really hunker down, look and see what different things we could do, make it a very phased approach so that it's not scary, start doing pilots and then move to production and really embrace the whole concept of, if you're going to move to the cloud, but also make sure that you're implementing the architecture properly and move this whole concept of delegating everything to the IT and work with the IT departments to actually come up with a joint solution that can really work for the business and the organization as a whole.
My guess is there's going to be an age gap there, not an air gap, an age gap. And many of the students are in colleges and are familiar with open source software and have no problem with it. And maybe folks that are closer to my age may resist that because when they were in college, there was no even proprietary software. So maybe it's a solution with younger people adopting and learning new techniques, especially with application of open source software. So Bill, if one of my listeners is listening to this interview and scratching their heads and going Cloud Security Alliance and wound up there, find out that it's all kinds of events that you have and they may want to participate in one of the events. China, maybe not. Germany, maybe not. But also in the United States. Is that correct?
That's right. We have a variety of events around the world, as you mentioned, and our big annual conference is coming up the last couple of days of September, next month in Las Vegas.
Do you participate in the Black Hat Conference out there?
We do.
And what do you think? Good, bad? I heard it's changed a lot in the last 6 years.
Well, I think it's good. It's good to bring all those people together, and obviously, things always are changing. So, yeah. I think that's a good thing.
30 seconds for you here, Juanita. In the next 5 years, where's Waverly Labs headed? Put you on the spot here, yeah.
Put you on the spot, of course, the CEO. Of course, we're going to grow. We'd like to see implementations of SDP and also added to that, the monitoring of applications, really helping application providers and cloud providers to secure, help their customers secure their applications. So providing a whole host of solutions and growing our company.
What's interesting is I read that you had a math background and I read your blog and I said, wow, she can write. I mean, you can write well. And I think one of the features for Waverly Labs is more of your writing and talking about real serious topics that people can sit down and maybe keep an open mind to open source. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, Bill Corrigan, Federal Director for the Cloud Security Alliance, and Juanita Coyle Pillay, founder and CEO of Waverly Labs.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.